Many of you may be familiar with this little symbol, the three little dots that form a triangle, which can be translated as therefore. One thing I didn't know or didn't remember is that it was originally used in mathematical proofs and was placed before the logical consequence of an equation. Therefore, or in conclusion, so this symbol was used. It dates back to at least the 19th century and maybe as early as the mid-1600s. Therefore, you're used to hearing that word, therefore knowing that the conclusion is soon to come, such as when one is sermonizing or speaking. You hear therefore and you think to yourself, ah, he's finally getting to the end. But the use of therefore can mean consequently, or to that end, or as a result. And it is used by the writer to the Hebrews. We look back and remember how the writer is comparing and contrasting the sacrificial practices that took place in the temple in Jerusalem with the sacrifice of Jesus. A reminder that the temple sacrifices took place every day. In fact, a lamb that was without mark or scarring was sacrificed every morning and every evening. Along with that, during the day there was a meat offering and there was a drink offering. There was the burning of incense. And so a pleasant aroma, it is said, would rise up and please God. And these practices had no end. And so it is described how the priest stands day after day after day performing these rituals, offering again and again and again and again, to which there is no end. And beyond that, the reality that the people were still conscious of their sinfulness, aware of their alienation from God. And then we have Jesus, who we are told then once and for all offered a single sacrifice. And with that, his work was finished. As it is described in the letter, and Jesus sat down at the right hand of God. You can relate. He retired from his earthly work. He sat down. He was done. He had fulfilled what the Scriptures had written. The covenant history had come to its climax. The words of the prophet Jeremiah rang out, "This is the covenant I will make with them." Jeremiah speaks on God's behalf of this new covenant. "I will remember their sins no more." For in Jesus we are truly cleansed and the stain is washed away. You know, that stain that's in the fabric, that stain that persists, that stain that, besides your best efforts, still cannot be removed. There is still that hint of his existence. It is that sinfulness, that stain, that is cleansed and washed away. And so with that in mind, the writer of the letter continues, "Therefore," no, I'm not done yet. "But therefore, it is written, consequently, as a result of all this that has taken place, we have the confidence to enter the sanctuary by the blood of Jesus." The curtain has been opened, it is said. The veil has been removed. And one can enter to the presence of God with confidence. We read of the function of Jesus similar to that as a priest. The name priest means to build bridges. And Jesus builds that bridge. That bridge that separates us from God so that now we live in the presence of God. And you know what it's like to be in the presence of someone dear to you. How important that is and what it means to you. It is far different from talking on the phone or Skyping or facing on the phone and those different things you can do. But being in the presence of one who is dear to you. That is what is written. That is what is emphasized, that we can be in that presence now and forevermore. There was a man who was traveling across the country visiting our national parks. And on the windshield of his car, he had a sticker. And on that sticker, there was a big S. And it was a permit that he had received as a senior citizen that he could go to all the national parks without any fee. The big S sticker there on the windshield. So he pulled into one particular national park and the young woman ranger meets them at the gate. Sees the sticker as he rolls down his window and she says, "Welcome! Are you still a senior citizen?" We are still in the presence of God. We live each day still with that relationship. And so the writer goes on then with an exhortation, strongly advising, earnestly and sincerely, and with great enthusiasm and zeal, saying, "Now, with that understanding, let us approach God with assurance of being cleansed and washed. Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope. Let us love and do good deeds. Let us meet together." Let us approach with assurance. Approach God with assurance. There are many reasons, perhaps, where we may fail to do so or feel we can't. Perhaps it's out of fear. There are many religions around us yet that teach of that fear of God. We are to remember all that has been done. All that has taken place leading up to this proclamation of now let us approach with assurance. Perhaps we are critical of our own selves. Perhaps we do not feel worthy. But those words remind us, guide us, direct us, and lead us. Yes, let us approach with assurance. And those words are a reminder of our need of the relationship that tells us that we have been washed. Reminds us that, yes, that cleansing is necessary and that there is no room for conceit for any of us. It is a cleansing that we have all needed. But let us approach with assurance. And let us hold on then to that hope. Let us cling to that hope, that belief, that creed. Let that be in whom we trust. Let us hold fast. Now I often get criticized for my sense of humor. And today I just want to build on that. As I show you a cartoon that I kind of came across, and it's about these researchers traveling through the jungles. They come to a clearing, and there they encounter the stick people, you know, the tribe of stick people. Okay, I'll show it to you. I want to set it up for you. Look, Stallings, it's the indigenous stick people, and they're worshiping their creator. I know, bad, isn't it? But yes, that's what I am. If you can't make it up, on top of the steps there on the altar is a pencil. Yeah. Oh! That's just perfect. Oh! But we then are reminded to hold on to that which we hope, of what our Creator has done, of the relationship that has been established, in whom we trust. And let us, we are told, provoke one another to love and good deeds. Encourage one another. We live our lives for the sake of others. We come to receive, but more so in order to give. And let us meet together. Let us gather and build up and strengthen one another in our community. In our day, we encourage people to gather together, often because there's an indifference or there's an apathy that's evident around us. But of which the writer of Hebrews addresses that those early Christians lived with the threat of persecution, the threat of their very existence. And encourage one another to meet together because many would avoid meeting because of the danger. Our scriptures lead us to Jesus. Therefore, a relationship has been established and we live in the presence of God's Spirit. And now let us live with assurance and hope and love and goodness. And let each of us ask ourselves how then now we will live that out.